RadioInfluence.com.
Flavor, please tell your neighbors. Ian Beckles with flavor in your ear. Wake up, sports, music, and fashion. Best of podcasting. What's going on now and what's soon to happen? Be sure to stick around, no fast forward or skipping. Dropping jewels, you don't want to miss them. Make sure you listen. Ian Beckles with the flavor in your ear. The voice of the people's here. It's here.
Welcome back to Flavor in Your Ear, everybody. This is Ian Beckles. I hope everybody had a wonderful week. It's been very eventful for me. My event is done. I can relax a little bit, although my life is not really of one to relax. I'm moving and grooving all the time. This is Flavor in Year. We're here once a week. We talk sports. We talk music. We talk movies, pop culture. We talk just about everything on Flavor in Year. That's why we started this up. Football season's right around the corner. And football's kind of my thing, and sports are my thing, since that's the way I'm constructed. We're going to have a podcast that's really going to talk about football in general. Obviously, we're going to talk a little bit more about Buccaneers, because that's where we live. That's our baby here in Tampa Bay. But we'll talk about a lot of different football going around in different areas. In the trenches is where what it's going to be called. That's where I lived for many years, and you know, my mentality is one in the trenches. So that's going to be coming up normally on Mondays, which will be after the Buccaneers play. You know, during preseason, we'll probably still do it on Mondays, even if they play on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. And during the season, we'll do it normally on Mondays. But whenever the Bucs play, we'll usually do it the day after. There's, I believe, a Thursday game, a Monday game. So we'll kind of change it up for that. And we can thank... you can thank Dirk Cutter first and foremost, and also Jameis Winston, because the Buccaneers are back in a situation where they have some nationally televised games, and you need one. They have to give you one, but now the Buccaneers have numerous, and because the expectations are so darn high, and they're really high, and Jameis Winston is just a rock star. Now, Hard Knocks is rolling up into town. It's not going to be much longer. We're going to start seeing them every single week on Hard Knocks. If you're not a big fan of Hard Knocks and you're a fan of football, I suggest you start watching it, because I don't like football shows normally, okay? I like Ballers, because really Ballers doesn't really talk about football. It's just stuff around football, which is very, very interesting. Hard Knocks... it's not a show about football. It's just football. They're just taping football. So none of that is bullshit. None of it. It's all real life stuff. That's why I love that. When I watch football movies and a lot of different shows about football, I don't find they depict, you know, the real life football very well. Hard Knocks can't, you know, they can't go wrong, because they just have cameras rolling all the time. Now, as a fan and a viewer, to me, that's beautiful. As an athlete or a Buccaneer, not so beautiful, because this is training camp. Training camp is long, and it's a long, and when I say long, it's hard to really explain how long. I was hanging out with Damar Dotson yesterday, the right tackle for the Buccaneers, and we're talking about training camp, and I've actually heard come out of people's mouth, I love training camp. No way. There's no way you love training camp. Nobody loves training camp. I can't think of too many things that would be harder. I don't know anything about a boot camp in the Army or the Navy. I'm sure that's very hard. But I would put an NFL training camp up against anything physically and mentally. Because, you know, if you're having a tough time in football, you're getting ran over, okay? And that's a tough situation. It's hot. There's nowhere to go. So training camp's around the corner. I will be there. Checking it out, and I love to be checking out training camp because I'm not on the field. Because there was many years where I was on the field looking up in the stands and people hanging up with big gulps and eating bags of chips, and I'm thinking, man, how wouldn't that be great just to not be out here smashing our heads in? Now, I was happy to be there because I was getting paid nicely to be out there, but it's just, we used to joke during training camp, how much money would you pay to end training camp right now. Some of the numbers were extremely high, okay? I mean, really, really high. I didn't have that much money, but I heard people say, I'll give $1 million right now if training camp be over. And I'm looking at them, and they're being serious, because every day of training camp kind of feels like 7 or 8 or 9 days in regular living days, okay? So, and I think training camp actually takes some days off your life as well. So Buccaneers are right around the corner. Hard Knocks is around the corner. People have asked me, is this a good thing for the Buccaneers? I don't know how it could possibly be a bad thing. First of all, you're selling jerseys, okay? You're selling hats. You're selling merchandise. You're letting people inside of your loop. People are hearing names for the first time. Those are all important things. I mean, I live here in Tampa Bay. I mean, I can name you the wide receivers, but nobody outside of Tampa Bay knows anybody but Mike Evans. After Hard Knocks, you're going to find yourself drawing a few people, and that's good. Dirk Cutter, he's trying to bring his team to another level. It's been a long time since the Buccaneers have really been a team that people have talked about in a good light to where we're expecting some things. And I think Dirk Cutter is a main cog of the success of this team, because when I hear players talk about him, it's all in a positive light. And I like Dirk Cutter because he stands for what he believes, and he doesn't waver from that. Coaches who waver, doesn't work. I love Raheem Morris to death. I mean, I like him as a person. He wavered too much, period. Greg Schiano, I don't know if he wavered, but what he was trying to get accomplished wasn't going to work, not with grown-ass men. It may work with college players. That's fine, because you got them dudes by the nuts. But an NFL player to tell you, go F yourself, okay? So you can't treat them like kids. And I think that's a little bit about Greg Schiano did. I think Dirk Cutter treats these guys like men, and he demands accountability. And I think that's why the Buccaneers are going to be good this year. Then we get to Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston demands accountability, and it's been that way for a long time. You know, it's been like that way since college, from what I hear, since high school and all the way through. Jameis Winston has been a winner forever, okay? That's what he does. His dad brought him up to be a winner. He speaks like a winner. I mean, he leads like a winner. Doesn't mean you're going to win, but it's a good start, because what they're trying to do is put people around Jameis Winston with the same mentality. But Jameis Winston is going to rub off on a lot of these guys, offensively, defensively, the whole nine yards. You know, it wasn't that long ago where our quarterback was Josh Freeman, okay? Nobody ever talked this way about Josh Freeman. Never. You always heard Josh Freeman was the first out of the building. Jameis Winston is the first in, last out. That's the best equation in the world. Offseason, Josh Freeman was out partying at the lodge in some cheerleader shorts and bare feet, okay? Hammered. Jameis Winston, everywhere I see him, and I see him often, I really do, everywhere he goes, he's almost perfect. And that's hard to do when you have that rock star status, because when I talk about everybody, when Jameis Winston walks in the room, you know who he's going to take a picture with? Everybody, including me. When I see Jameis, I talk to him. When I talk to him, he looks me square in my eye, and he listens to every word I have to say. And I said, let me snap that pic. I snap a picture with Jameis, put it on social media, and here come all the comments. Love that guy. He's a winner, blah, 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 blah. It hasn't been like that for a long, long time. So wait till you see what Hard Knocks does to Jameis Winston, because I think the rest of the country, they're aware of what Jameis Winston is all about, but they've never seen it, and I don't think they've ever felt it. Here in Tampa Bay, in this area, I think we felt it, and we know where we're going, hopefully. Now, that being said, when the expectations are that high, there's a lot of pressure, okay? You know, just ask the Tampa Bay Lightning last year, who everybody and their dog was picking them to win the Stanley Cup, and they didn't make the playoffs. So just everybody thinking you're going to be good, it doesn't work that way, because the pressure is a son of a bitch. If you lose that first game, all of a sudden, if you lose the second game, you know, the percentages goes way, 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 way down of you making the playoffs. So pressure starts immediately. Pressure starts in training camp. Pressure starts as soon as you start your offseason program, because it's not like this is a 4-12 team that is just trying to win seven games. That's done. Hopefully that's over with. Okay, this they have to go into this season with the mentality of going to the playoffs at least. And I played on seven different Buccaneer teams here from 90 through 96. And I'll be honest with you, at no time, you're not gonna believe me, but at no time did anybody ever talk about going to the playoffs. Not one time. And if you don't talk about going to the playoffs, you ain't going. You're not going. I've been to locker rooms at the end of my career with the Jets and the Broncos. The mentality and the mindset was, I mean, it was different. They were going in with the mindset of going to the Super Bowl. And you just can't luck yourself into going to the Super Bowl. Now, I've had a couple people say to me, you think the Bucs can make the Super Bowl this year? No, I don't. I don't. There's very few teams that are going to go from, you know, perennial losers, which unfortunately, that's what we are at this moment, okay? It could change real quick, but you don't go from perennial losers to the Super Bowl. You got to take your steps. You got to, you know, it's a process. And first things first, let's get to the playoffs. There's still things we have to do a lot better. Rush the passer is one. I've said this many times. I'm not sure if rushing the passer isn't the most important thing in football right now. If you can't rush the passer, you can't play. Because there's not a quarterback out there that you let sit back there that's not going to shred you apart. And with the new rules in the NFL where you can't really touch the receivers at all, if you don't rush the passer, you're going to get shredded up for 400 yards passing by everybody. Not just Tom Brady or Drew Brees. I'm talking about everybody. The games where, you know, Jameis goes off, he's clean. The games where Jameis has to run for his life, it's tough. It's tough sledding for any quarterback out there. So rushing the passer is essential. Running the ball is essential. And it all comes down to the lines. Everybody wants to look at the quarterbacks and the wide receivers and the running backs. There's at times where those guys are irrelevant. Give me two good lines. Give me two great lines. And you're going to figure out ways to win football games. So I'm excited about this year with the Buccaneers. Hard Knocks is going to be fun. Training camp's going to be fun. And we're going to be starting up in the trenches here real soon. And I'll bring on some guests here and there that could help me talk about the game and where the Buccaneers are headed. And I made the prediction months ago. Okay, I want to say almost at the beginning of the year that the Buccaneers are going to the playoffs. So I hope they don't let me down. One of my favorite shows throughout the year is the ESPYs. Okay, I like the Grammys and I like the Oscars. I like that. The ESPYs is obviously near and dear to my heart because it's sports related and you get to see athletes in a different light, dressed up. And there was some dapper cats yesterday, no doubt about that. The great Peyton Manning was the MC, and I thought he did a great job. I really did. He busted balls. I'm sure Peyton somewhere along the way is going to have some acting jobs, and he already has, actually. So Peyton's going to land on his feet, and Peyton's going to be a star, that's for sure. And it was the 25th annual ESPYs last night, and I did watch that. One of these days, I want to get my ass over to the ESPYs. I want to say it used to be in Miami. Now it's in L.A., so L.A.'s real, real far. So I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon. Out of all the people there, I thought Danica Patrick looked the best. She looked fantastic. I hear people say sometimes, well, Danica Patrick is just, she's good looking for a race car driver, but she's not that great looking. I've met Danica Patrick at the studio when I was with 620. Danica Patrick is fine. And she's getting finer as she goes. I don't know how old she is, but she's in fantastic shape. So I thought Danica Patrick was the winner yesterday. But another winner was, they always give out the Pat Tillman Award, okay? And I played against Pat Tillman back in the day. I didn't know him personally. I know I shook his hand. I had respect for what he was as a football player. But that was just a fraction of the respect I had for Pat Tillman as a person and what he did, okay? And if you're not aware of what Pat Tillman did, you know, he just signed a contract with the Cardinals. He was a safety. Just signed a contract with the Cardinals for a substantial amount of money. And he, you know, surpassed that to go get enlisted in the Army. Okay, so, I mean, that's a big deal for me. I understand because the Army's not going anywhere, okay? So you could play out your years of football, then go. Those are legitimate years of making legitimate money. Now, if you read up a lot of stuff on Pat Tillman, he was the kind of guy that'll say to somebody, hey, I'm going to run a marathon next week and just run a marathon. That's just the kind of guy he was. Everybody around him was very affected by him in a positive manner. And now he has the old Pat Tillman Award. Now, it was tragic the way he was killed. And you know how much I love our beloved government. He got killed and the government came out and made a real heroic story about how he got killed. Real heroic. And then about 2 weeks later, his family found out it was friendly fire. So we killed him ourselves. But the government can't tell the truth. And I'm not being an asshole. It's just fact. They can't tell the truth. So they had to backtrack and explain why they were lying. So it's, and nothing has changed. That's many, 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 many years ago. And nothing has changed. And we're going to get into that later. Because I don't know if anybody's even able to tell the truth on either side of the government. Nobody's just able to tell the truth anymore. I don't know if they're allowed to. It's gotten that ugly. But the Pat Tillman Award is one of those awards I like to see every year. And they had a young man, Israel Del Toro, okay, enlisted. He was in a car, like a Hummer. It got hit, blew up, and he ended up having third-degree burns on 80% of his body. I mean, his fingers got blown off, so he has, like, nubs for hands. He has burns all over his body. His face is unrecognizable. And these are the kind of stories that I love, okay? Dude, like, everybody's like, you won't walk, you won't run, you won't this, you won't that. Dude told him to go F themselves. I'm going to do whatever. And then they show him running. They show him in the gym bench pressing. Now, he doesn't have fingers, okay? So he has, like, a couple fingers, and he's bench pressing. I love that kind of stuff because you can't tell him anything. And he's in great shape. He re-enlisted in the Army and now is going up the ranks. So, you know, for people out there who says, well, my back hurts, I can't go run, or this hurts and blah, blah, blah. Look at these kind of stories. I think these kind of stories, you know, really inspire me more than anything. So that was my favorite part. And then I look back and you know, listening to his story and the pain that he's been through, although in a positive manner, can you imagine being in this accident and then seeing your son for the first time, his little son, I believe he's 3 or 4 years old, and worrying that he's not going to recognize you? Can you imagine that? And he talked through the time where he went and saw his son for the first time, and he said his son walked up and he stopped. And he was like, oh my God, my son's going to be scared of me. And then his son gave him a big hug and it was an amorous thing. And obviously his son realized what he'd been through. And those are the kind of stories I absolutely love. And I was very adamant about being pissed off about this one situation a few years ago. And I'm still pissed off. When I see on the ESPYs, you know, people getting those type of awards, I still go back to the time when they gave Caitlyn Jenner the Arthur Ashe Award. Come on, ESPN. Come on, bro. Like, I understand at that time Caitlyn Jenner was a big deal, but Caitlyn Jenner gets the Arthur Ashe Award? I'm more so going to lean towards Israel Del Toro as being a hero. What has Caitlyn Jenner done that's heroic? Come on. Even, you know, even people that are going through the same thing that Caitlyn Jenner is going through doesn't think Caitlyn Jenner is a hero. Go look it up. All Caitlyn Jenner is doing is, you know, glamorizing this whole thing. And I don't see anything heroic in that. So to me, the ESPYs is one of the best shows around. I watch it from beginning to end, and I can't wait for it to come back. I mean, it's only on once a year, and I hope it comes back to Miami, because one of these days I want to dress up real G and go hang out at the ESPYs. Now, I watched the ESPYs last night, but before that, I watched a spectacle that I don't think I'll ever forget. Now, I'm a huge boxing fan. I'm actually talking right now about getting a boxing match here in the Tampa Bay area. Put my name on a dignitary. I've loved boxing forever. Ali fan. End up knowing Angelo Dundee. I know a lot of different boxing people in this area. I was part of Star Fight. I used to put boxing matches on at the A La Carte Pavilion. Keith Thurman I know very well. I know Antonio Tarver. Winky Wright, Jeff Lacey. So I love boxing. I've loved boxing forever. Okay. Now, we know the whole Mayweather-McGregor fight is coming upon us. I think it's August 26th. Now, you know, if you're not a fan of either UFC or boxing, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. If you would have watched that press conference yesterday, once again, not a weigh-in. This is over a month. It's about a month and a half away from the fight. This was a press conference, okay, in Toronto, Canada. I'm Canadian, so no Canadian jokes, please. In Toronto, Canada, they had a press conference with Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. There was about 25,000 people at a press conference, which is unheard of. I don't remember that happening before, and it may not happen after. It might not. But there was 25,000 people waiting there to hear what Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather had to say. Now, they were not disappointed, I promise you. McGregor went up there, and I bet McGregor talked for 15, 20 minutes. I bet there was 200 F-bombs, maybe. Talked about Floyd Mayweather in every which way. Talked about his mama. Talked about tax evasion. Talked about everything negative about Floyd Mayweather, okay? In his face, like right in his face. And I was like, this is the best crap I've seen in a long time. And I've said this before, it's the best matchup ever put out there. Nobody's ever matched up two guys that are better for television, okay? I'm not talking about the fight itself. I'm talking about the matchup. The matchup is glorious. So I watched Conor McGregor go off for 20 minutes. I watched Floyd Mayweather go off for another 15 minutes. I watched them face-to-face talk about each other's mothers and sisters for another 5 minutes. When I mean face-to-face, I mean they were spitting in each other's mouths. They were that close. I mean on each other, just talking bad about. And this is what's great about it. Conor McGregor doesn't have a chance. And by the time the fight comes, the media is going to make, cause I'm watching the UFC channel because it's on FS1, and that's the UFC channel. And I'm listening to everybody talk, and everybody's picking Conor McGregor. And I want to say, you're not serious. You can't be serious. But they're serious. They want everybody to tune in. They're going to make more money in a roundabout way. So you don't want to go up there and say, well, Conor's not going to beat somebody in their sport. They don't want to say that. But this spectacle was amazing. And to see all those people there in Toronto, they're going to do it in L.A., London, and Brooklyn as well. So I've never seen a press conference tour ever. Like, I've never heard of that before. And to be packing arenas just to hear guys talk shit is amazing to me. And I'm going to watch every one of them. And if I'm not there to watch it, I'm going to videotape it. Because what's his name? Conor McGregor came out and said something in the first press conference. And I heard Drew Garabo on 102.5 The Bone discussing this yesterday. First of all, if you've watched Conor McGregor throughout his fights, he openly says racist stuff, okay? He ain't hiding it. When you're calling a Mexican guy Papi Chulo, it's a line. There's a line. And there's been many other situations, okay? And Mayweather went up there and Conor McGregor said, dance for me, boy. Okay. As an African-American or as a black man, if somebody says, dance for me, boy, before the Y comes out, I'm punching you in the face, okay? Because they had a big debate on Drew Garabo's show whether that was okay or not okay. And they had, from what I heard when I was listening in the car, there was about 7 people call in, Caucasian people, that said, it's okay. As a black man, I'm telling you guys, it's not okay, all right? It's not okay to call a black man boy. It's just not, okay? You guys, you can't make up rules. It's not. You can try it. Don't try it with me. You can try it with somebody. You can go through, you know, you can do some investigative journalism if you want and go call a black man boy and see how it turns out. If they don't turn on you, I don't know, but you might catch a face full of something. So Conor McGregor and a lot of the different excuses were, well, he's Irish. They call a lot of people boy. The tone wasn't right. I'm telling you, I listened to the tone. I know the tone. and the tone definitely wasn't right. So the fight's going to be amazing. Not the product, just the pageantry. And what I love about it is Conor McGregor believes he can win. I can see it in his eyes. He believes he can win. He's a bad SOB. I've watched his fights. He's one of the toughest dudes I've ever seen. Like, I watched Conor McGregor at times getting his ass whooped, still talking shit. On the ground, on his back, talking shit the whole time, end up winning the fight. So as far as a toughness, Conor McGregor's a tough son of a gun. But you just don't want to be eating leather all fight long. That's not going to last. He's going to bludgeon his face, and you may not recognize him at the end. But I can't wait. The fight, the tickets, they say the cheapest ticket in the house is $500. That's the cheapest ticket. And I bet those tickets are going to be gone within a second. Actually, all the tickets are going to be gone within a second. And they're saying that the tickets are going to go up to, and this is box office tickets now, they're going to go up to $10,000 in a box office. That means somebody's going to get $100,000 for those front row tickets. That's going to happen. Somebody's going to gobble up the tickets, and they're going to end up getting to Will Smith and LeBron James and guys like that. And it may not be them themselves paying for it, but their representatives will make sure that they're out front. That's for sure. And think about all the big name people out there that are going to want to be seen in the front row. Just think about the caliber of person that's going to be in the front row. I mean, there's going to be nobody less than Spike Lee in the front. Spike Lee might not even make the front. He might not. And then again, he might. But it's going to be, this thing is going to be amazing. I know some people actually are fighting on the undercard of that, which is going to be amazing for their fame as well. And there's going to be so many people riding the coattails of this fight. It's going to be absolutely amazing. The promotions have been amazing. And when in Toronto, you know, this is, whether you like it or not, it always ends up, and I've said this many times, a white boxer against a black boxer is the best thing in the world. You've seen the movie Great White Hype, okay? I think it's a hilarious movie. This movie, McGregor and Mayweather is going to turn out just like Great White Hype. By the time the fight comes up, people are going to go, Terry Conklin's going to beat, I don't remember the other dude's name. He's going to beat him, and then he's going to go night-night. Everybody's going to go, oh, really? He's substantially inferior, because that's what's happening. I mean, Conor McGregor is an inferior boxer. Conor McGregor wouldn't beat Ricky Hatton. He wouldn't. Ricky Hatton's a boxer. Conor McGregor is a fighter. Those are two completely different things. So I can't wait till the 26th to see what happens. I don't like to pay for fights because, you know, it's a lot of that money. I think this one's like $100. But I'll find a way to bootleg it, and I'm going to watch the fight. If not, I'm going to somebody's house and check it out. But I guarantee I'm not missing this fight, because there's a potential where something crazy happens in this fight, like a Tyson-Holyfield fight. When Tyson and Holyfield fought, I remember, and I swear, everybody was at my house, and I said before the fight, something crazy is going to happen. And that was one of the craziest things ever. And I grew up a Mike Tyson fan. I'm still a Mike Tyson fan in an odd way. And Mike Tyson bit his ear because he wanted out. The only other way to go out of a boxing match is to give up, like Duran did back in the day. And you don't want that, because you could be the toughest SOB the rest of your life. You give up, that's what you are. You can be somebody who gave up. You can give up or go to sleep. And Tyson was like, I don't like either one of these. I'm going to bite my way out of this thing. And he tried to and still didn't get out of it. So I have a funny feeling something really, really funky is going to happen in this fight. And I guarantee I'm not going to miss it. I don't know if you guys are basketball fans or not. I am. I like NBA even more than NCAA basketball. And I know everybody out there is going, no way. Well, that's just me. I grew up watching NBA basketball. And I'm kind of intrigued with this Lonzo Ball thing. First of all, he came out with some shoes that are worth almost $300. I don't hate him for that. If you want to buy some shoes for $300, that's fine. I'm all good. If somebody gives me a pair, I'll wear them, no doubt. I'll sport them real, real nice. I'm just not going to pay $300 for a pair of shoes. And I don't hate him for selling shoes for $300. I really don't. But Lonzo Ball, to me, and listen, Lonzo Ball is a player that is run by LeVar Ball. Okay, his father was a former basketball player, and I feel bad for Lonzo. This is why. I think he's a timid young kid who's a great basketball player and obviously has an overpowering, overbearing father. And when you have an overpowering, overbearing father, you can't really say shit about anything. And I know Lonzo Ball at times would like to say, yo, dad, let's tone this down a little bit. Because unfortunately for Lonzo Ball, when he goes to anybody else's court, they're booing him. Can you imagine a young kid coming out of college getting booed and he hasn't even played yet? So whether LeVar Ball, his father, knows this or not, boy, you're putting a lot of pressure on that young man. I know he came out in the summer league the first game and he was like 2 for 15 or something crazy, terrible like that. I think he played very, very well in the second game. But I feel bad for this kid because it's not about him. It's about his father. That's a tough situation. And to be hated, I've never really heard Lonzo Ball say 5 words, really. I've heard his father incessantly just gabbing about how great his son is. And that's going to create hate in the fans. And you know where else? On the court. You know, those players out there, they're going to talk bad about him. They're going to talk bad about his father. They're going to call him a papa's boy. They're going to call him all kind of different words. But Lonzo Ball, I'll tell you what, you know, for him to live up to what his father says he is, which is better than Stephen Curry, you can't do that, bro. You're disrespecting the game of basketball. And because he's been in the game, he should know that. But to come in and be comparing him to Jordan and Curry, it's too much pressure on a young kid. So, you know, he's somewhere where you can't fake it. And it's going to be interesting to really see how this whole thing turns out. With his father around, I'm not positive that Lonzo Ball could be successful. I'm not sure. Because I think he's putting himself in a position where even if he's really good, it's not going to be good enough because his father is already saying he's the best. So I'm a Lonzo Ball fan. LeVar Ball, if I don't ever see him again, would be great. I think that'd be better off for Lonzo Ball as well. So keep your eyes on that one. But I have a funny feeling that one's going to implode in front of everybody. Lonzo Ball is going to trip out and do something because you could tell he's suppressing a lot of stuff and hearing a lot of crap from fans already, and he hasn't even played one NBA game yet. So keep your eyes on that. So I like to watch television. I don't get a chance to watch a whole lot of it. And I saw a show the other day. I want to say it might have been on CNN, oddly. And it was called The 90s. So I just put it on. Tom Hanks produced it and directed it. And, I mean, I'm a Tom Hanks fan. I think most people are. And then it was about the 90s and everything that happened in the 90s. And I'm turning 50 here next week, a week from today. And so I lived through the 90s, obviously, and that was a big part of my life. And they were going over everything that happened in the 90s, and I just was shaking my head. Like, some of it I was in, like 100% in. And some of it I just missed, which was odd. They were breaking down all the different things that were accomplished in the 90s. You know, first of all, we're on television, so they talked about a lot of television. And I was amazed at some of the shows that I'd never seen. Like, I've never seen some of these shows that will go down as one of the, you know, some of the highest rated shows out there. Twin Peaks, never seen it. I've heard it's awesome, never seen it. I've never watched an X-Files. And I don't know if that's my type of television. Never seen it. Then they were coming up with shows like Cop Rock. Now, I don't know if anybody remembers that. I think Stephen Bochco, who did Hill Street Blues or one of those cop shows, thought that having cops dance was going to be a good idea. So it was kind of a mix between the show Cops and Glee. I'm sure you could probably Google it and probably pull up a couple episodes. You might want to do that. It was the worst crap ever. And I remember watching that a couple times. And the funny part is I don't even think I hated it at the time. But it was really bad. They were showing some highlights of Cop Rock from back in the day. And it was god awful. And he was sitting up there, you know, Stephen Bochco said, oh, I thought it was a good idea. But now I look back at it, I mean, not so great of an idea. Then they were coming up with shows like Seinfeld. Woo. I watched every single Seinfeld out there, I think. I think I watched them all. And I used to watch them. I used to watch reruns. I'm a big rerun guy. Like, I watch Mike and Molly over and over. I watch King and Queens over and over. I watch Big Bang Theory over and over. There's a lot of shows I watch over. I watch Martin over and over. And I used to watch Seinfeld religiously. And then Kramer effed it up. After Kramer went up there and just had the N-word roll off his mouth real easy, more than once, I just don't find him funny anymore. And it's sad because I used to think Kramer was hilarious. Now I just don't think he's funny for whatever reason. Well, I want to know what reason, because he's a racist pig. But I watched just about all the Seinfelds. They were bringing up Cheers. I think 93 million people watched the finale of Cheers. And I was one. I think I've watched every single Cheers, okay? And then they went through a little segment of how black the 90s were. And I was thinking, well, the 90s weren't black. Really, they really were. Now, think of all these different shows that all of a sudden popped up, because in the 80s, you know, they would sprinkle in a black guy here and sprinkle in a black guy here, but there wasn't really black shows in the 80s. I mean, there was some exceptions. I want to say the Jeffersons, maybe, Good Times, but I mean, really, there was not that many black shows, unfortunately, back in the day. You know, you wanted black people to be depicted a certain way. But then all of a sudden in the 90s, these black shows start popping up. First and foremost, Arsenio Hall came on the scene. And you know, that time it was all about, you know, Johnny Carson, I want to say David Letterman at that time, or maybe he appeared during the 90s. But then Arsenio Hall came on the scene. And, you know, as an African-American man who loves hip-hop music, you know, Jay Leno and Johnny Carson are not going to put Tupac Shakur on their show. They just didn't want to do it. Nobody in their circle would do it. And that's Arsenio Hall would. And it really did a lot for black culture way, way back then in the 90s. And then when he came off the air, that was sad, but it was time. You know, he obviously didn't overstay his welcome, but he definitely got it in. But, you know, I remember in Arsenio Hall where Hillary Clinton was up there with Bill Clinton, and you watch the interview, it was actually very interesting. And then Bill Clinton went up afterwards and played the saxophone with some sunglasses on. I'm like, this is a cool dude. And, you know, of all the presidents, I'd probably say Bill Clinton is the one I like to hang out with. Okay. So, you know, Arsenio Hall allowed people to be themselves and loosen up a little bit. My favorite Arsenio Hall was Julia Roberts' brother, Eric Roberts, was a very successful actor. Arsenio Hall was reading his notes. And Eric Roberts was up there, and he was being very eloquent. And he said, "Here, Arsenio said, I'm reading that you have a stuttering problem." He goes, "You haven't stuttered." And all of a sudden, like Eric Roberts, something went over his face, and he just started to stutter. And it was one of the most uncomfortable things I've ever seen in my life. He went from being eloquent to not being able to say three words without the stuttering. So that was all very, very interesting. So Arsenio Hall was definitely missed. And then they started rambling off a bunch of other shows that happened in the 90s. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, obviously, with Will Smith. That was huge for him. And The Great Carlton from back in the day. That was a show everybody watched. And then you saw black people with money for the first time. You're like, that's kind of cool. You know, I could have some money. So the Fresh Prince was very enjoyable. I kind of had a crush on that little Mallory. I don't know what her name was. I know she was also in The Ladies' Man. Whoever Mallory was, I had a little crush on her. And then In Living Color came up, all right? And the Wayans brothers came up, and they brought dancing and some funkiness and some crazy skits. It wasn't all black, okay? Jim Carrey was in there, and it was, to me at the time, some of the funniest crap I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I can go back and put in an In Living Color video right now and laugh my ass off, okay? I mean, that's some old school stuff, but to me, that was hilarious. Living Single, Moesha, In the House, The Sinbad Show, Jamie Foxx Show, Rock. If anybody's old enough, you remember Rock, kind of a heavyset dude. So there was a bunch of black shows at the time. And they were just surfacing. And everybody wanted to see what black folk were doing at that time. It seems like it's kind of backed up a little bit lately. There's still a few here and there. But it seems like there was a time in the 90s where that was like the thing. And that's a time where a lot of black comedians were flourishing. And then they were talking about NYPD Blue. And I watched it a little bit. And I never knew it to be a racy series. And then they were showing it, and they had some racy language. They really did, where people, religious folks, were up in arms, and they were protesting NYPD blue. And you know what happens when you protest things? It becomes more popular. Oh my God, they're using foul language. If I heard somebody using foul language on TV, the next time it's on, I'm putting it on. And that wasn't time with DVRs. You got to watch it at the time, and that's it. So NYPD blue was wonderful. Law and Order. I didn't really watch a lot of Law and Order, although it's obviously a fantastic show. They replay them to death. And then ER was a show that I used to watch religiously. And I could probably still watch it. And you look at the cast of ER, they had some amazing actresses and actors on ER. You need to go check that out. And then they came up with the OJ trial. I'm obsessed with the OJ trial, and it's years and years and years and years afterwards. But anything on TV that has to do with OJ Simpson and the trial, I watch, because I always come up with a tidbit I never knew before, because at the time it was just, is he guilty or not guilty? But so much happened in between it, and so many people became rock stars. The lawyers were rock stars, the judge was a rock star, everybody was a rock star, okay? And that came out, and 150 million people watched the verdict, okay? And I think it was Chris Rock said, OJ verdict came up. He goes, white people, too mad. Black people, too happy. That's a good way to sum it up. Like they won something. They didn't win anything. And I said this before. It wasn't for Rodney King, OJ went down. I mean, that was payback for Rodney King. It was just too close. And, you know, black people were mistreated in that area for a long, long, long time. And if you have enough money and you have good enough lawyers, you could chop people's heads off. That's been documented. So the OJ trial was a big thing. And then they were coming up with stuff like Frasier. Everybody Loves Raymond. I love all those shows. Will and Grace was amazing. That did a lot for the homosexual community, obviously. Because if you go back to the 80s, you can't have two gay guys on the show. It's just not going to work in the 80s. In the 90s, everybody was ready for Will and Grace, which was absolutely hilarious. And Oz, if you remember Oz on HBO, fantastic show. With Adebisi and Schillinger and all those guys, fantastic show. I would probably still watch that now. Dawson Creek, I don't think I ever watched. I think that's a kiddie thing. I don't even know who was in it. I know they brought it up in like Jay and Silent Bob once and made me laugh, but I don't know who's in Dawson Creek, nor do I care. I get it was like a bootleg 90210, which I did watch that, unfortunately. And then it was a Sopranos to end it with. There's not too many better series than the Sopranos ever. I don't care what color you are. The Sopranos was excellent. Okay. That was like Scarface series mixed in with The Godfather and Carlito's Way and all of them put together, because the Sopranos were absolutely, absolutely fabulous. I always like to sprinkle in a little politics, and I think I'm just going to sprinkle it in these days, because you don't want to be too one-sided, because I'm just trying to find two sides. I've been looking for two sides. I can't find it. And like I said earlier in this show, I don't know if anybody in politics is able to say the truth at all. They're not allowed to speak the truth. I don't think they're allowed to. And I think if you speak the truth in politics, I think you're fired immediately. And that's been documented. Now, the whole time, everybody's saying there's no collusion. We have no ties to Russia. That's how it started. You remember, we have no ties to Russia. Now we're finding out dudes are cooking dinner for the Russian dudes. You know what I mean? It's like they're having meetings, they're meeting lawyers, they're doing this, they're doing that. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, yeah, we know him, but it's not a bad thing. It's not a negative thing. This is getting to a point now where you lied, and you lied again, and you lied again, and you lied one more time. Now you want us to believe you. Come on now. It's stupid. It's getting to a point now where I put on shows, and the same people are making the same excuses for the same people over and over and over, and it's getting disgusting. It really is. And for more evidence to come up every single day about collusion. Now, President Trump told us at one point, if I lose, it's because of hacking. He said that way back in the day. What he's trying to say is, I know something's happening. If I lose, I'm going to complain. But if I win, it's all good. He said that. If I win, it's all good. If I lose, I'm going to complain. So he knew something was going on. So but what basically Putin had going with him was he dangling him up like a puppet. And he's saying, yo, you're going to do this for me and I'll have you win. If you don't do it, you're going to lose. Pretty much. And he won. And we went over the numbers, another one of my Flavonier podcasts. And the numbers that they said that changed the voting was like 9 million votes. So Russia affected 9 million votes. So when people tell me that my vote counts, I don't believe that. When 9 million votes came from one person in another country, how can we say that our votes count anymore? And the one thing I haven't heard from our government is this. We have to figure out how they did this. Let's figure out how they hacked into our system. It's all, no, they didn't. Don't worry about it. No, they didn't. Come on now. It's getting to a point where you're making us look and sound stupid. And I don't want to look and sound stupid. I try to look and sound intelligent for the most part. But for people that are keep on backing the president and this system now, it's getting to a point where it's sounding ridiculous. And it's getting to a point now where there's one side, okay? There's the lies and the truth. And unfortunately, the lies is our whole governmental system. The whole thing is a lie. The whole thing. And I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat. I don't give a rat's ass. I really don't. Everybody's just lying. If you're in a relationship, okay, and one day you see me coming out of this girl's house, and you're like, hey, why are you coming out the house? Oh, no, we're just friends. Don't worry about it. And then the next week, you see me coming out of another girl's house. Why are you coming out of that girl's house? No, don't worry about it. We're just friends. After a while, those lies are going to wear out, okay? It's to the point now where it's just worn out now, okay? And I don't give a shit what anybody has to say in the government anymore. I don't care because it's lies. And I'm not one side or the other. I don't care. I just know that when everything comes out of your mouth is a freaking lie, I don't want to hear it anymore. And I still like to watch, you know, some of the shows on the different channels and their views. And it's getting to a point now where it's getting ridiculous. And it's almost like we're the Truman Show and everybody else is watching us and laughing. People in Russia have to be watching us and laughing. Yeah, they're laughing. Hee, 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 hee. Look at what we did. Putin's looking at us laughing, that's for sure. So, you know, to say this is the best country in the world, I don't want to go anywhere. I love this place, but you know, the best country in the world wouldn't allow another country to affect their election, and that's what we let happen. So we should all be ashamed of ourselves, and we just keep on pounding our own chest, but, you know, that's some pussy shit, straight up. And President Trump or somebody has to step up and say, we got to figure out how this happened and how it won't happen again. And while you think I'm piling on Trump, I'm not sure Obama didn't know about it either. I'm not positive. I just think he wants to shut his mouth and go on and live in his ranch wherever he's at and, you know, chill out and smoke that good stuff because you know he gets that good stuff. Anyways, it's always wonderful to talk to you guys. I'm coming in again next week. In the trenches is going to be starting soon because Buccaneer football season is right around the corner. And what I'm going to do is link myself up with some interesting people that also know a lot about football. And we're going to break down Buccaneer games, talk about the Buccaneer season because I'm excited. I'm excited about this Buccaneer season. And if you're not a Buccaneer fan, it's not too late or too early to ride the coattails and jump on that bandwagon. So we will allow you to jump on. Ian Beckles, Flavor in Your Ear. Everybody have a wonderful week and please be safe. Peace out.
To keep the conversation going, follow Ian on Twitter at Ian Beckles and check out DignitaryRadio.com to get the latest on where you can find him next. This has been Ian Beckles, Flavor in Your Ear on Radio Influence.
Put the flavor in your ear, the voice of the people's here. It's in that flavor. Flavor. Bringing that flavor.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.